Screwtape Letters podcast friends and faithful, our book, Confronting Evil in Our Time, is now available for pre-order and will be in stores everywhere. As Paul writes in Ephesians 6:12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against the spiritual wickedness in high places." Confronting Evil in Our Time arms you to confront them, reject their lies, and put Jesus Christ at the center of your life. When you're finished with the book, pass it forward. Open the eyes of friends to the spiritual warfare that rages on. Galen and I have poured our hearts into the pages of this book over the past year, wrestling truth from the shadows. We need your support. Grab a copy today, and God bless. So welcome back to the Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. This is season two. We're digging into the biblical Easter eggs in the Screwtape Letters. And for everyone who's been listening, it's been a minute since we've actually had one of these episodes. We're working heavily on the book. And we're now back with letter 29 covering the biblical Easter eggs we found in there. And Galen, how are things with you?
Yeah, doing pretty well. We're staying very busy out here. Obviously working on this book, you and I have connected quite a bit. Our listeners would never know it.
No, nope.
But been keeping our head down and hand to the plow quite a bit.
So I've got to ask as well, and also tell the audience about this, which is the release of your Talk About Courage, Martyrs Red, Charlie Kirk honoring Butler Wine.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to share it if people would like to know about it. We, I've just been so incredibly moved since Charlie's brutal assassination. We talk about confronting evil in our time. That's what this podcast is all about. That one just really hit me hard on a personal level. I think a lot of people in the country as well. I think there's a lot of people who are grieving, like they lost a loved one that they knew very close and dear. We all felt that way with Charlie. And I was just moved to really do whatever little I can to help commemorate him and also really just galvanize the message that he is a good Christian man and died not just for his political views, but because of his faith. I think he's a martyr. I think he's a martyr. So obviously we have the winery, and I had the idea to do it and was working on it for a while, was deciding whether or not I would release it, but we made a commemorative bottle for Charlie to honor him. It has a very dramatic and iconic portrait on the front label, and we registered the name Martyrs Red. And by the way, we were able to get that name registered because any wine bottle or a bottle of alcohol, spirits, beer, wine has to be approved by the federal government. And that one needed special approval to get released. And that's it got approved 2 days before the government shut down.
Wow.
I had waited any longer, this thing would be like waiting for the government to reopen, which may never happen. So Martyrs Red is its official registered brand or registered name. It's to me, and I know I made it, I'm a little bit partial, but it's the most powerful passion project I've ever worked on. I think it's a beautiful label. And we're also designating 25% of all sales right off the top to go to a qualifying nonprofit that Erica will choose. And if I don't hear back from her on what her choice is, then we'll just give those funds to Turning Point.
Now, we'll leave in the message notes of the show a link that people can go to for that. But you know, the reason that's so pertinent, and we didn't wait for this, which is Charlie Kirk was all about courage,
right?
And right, not only about courage, but you know, he did something. And for those that will get our book and read it, one thing you'll see is, and one of the topics we talk about in there is making sure you don't pervert your faith with your political ideals. Make sure your faith informs your politics, not that your politics informs your faith.
Right. And it is a really important distinction. And I don't know if we're in a spot where we can solve that problem or answer all those questions in any single podcast. But I think it's one that we really need to call attention to, because I see two errors that people make. Number one, there's a group of Christians that are saying, well, your faith, you know, separation of church and state. So let's get faith out of the government. We shouldn't try to impose Christian morals or Christian beliefs on people. So we shouldn't vote in this way. And I think it's a terrible mistake. I think it's a horrible mistake. We should have our faith pouring out into every aspect of our life. We talk about that in the book extensively. And then on the other end of the spectrum, people try to entwine their faith and their politics too much. And that's where you get like Christian nationalism and things like that. So it's something to really be aware of. I think this is an important conversation that the Christians need to be having, because we need to stand up courageously and boldly within the authority that God gave us, without trying to, you know, take things to a bad extreme.
Yeah, for sure. And look, one thing it says in Romans about submit to authority, in as much as you do not disobey God, that in as much as you do not disobey God is the primary. You live by God's laws first, and then you submit to authority. And this is where we're talking about having a government that we voted for as something that's democratic, something that isn't a situation that's been forced on us like a dictatorship. And be honest with it, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, especially in America, looking at this, is we've had democratically held elections, and you may not like the candidate, and you don't have to like the candidate that eventually wins, but you have to stay true as a Christian to God's laws first, and let your faith inform your politics. But you know, that's just a little look into something we cover in our book. It's something that obviously both of us are very passionate around Charlie Kirk's situation as well. And anyone who's in that position of standing up for Jesus Christ in the public square. And on another note as well, I think talking about Charlie Kirk, we've also got to say, and it's not really covered much in the news, but there are Christians throughout China, Christians throughout North Korea, who are being imprisoned or murdered for their faith. And across Africa, we're seeing in places like Nigeria, which, you know, we thought Nigeria had been through their struggle, but you've got a situation there where whole villages are being killed by basically Muslim extremists who are coming in, and anyone who professes faith in Jesus Christ is being killed. So standing up for your faith, like, you know, we do it in this country, in America, in the Western world, maybe get shouted down by somebody. You know, rarely are we fearing for our death, but that, you know, that's where courage is. So Galen, letter 29, what's our Easter egg that we're looking at in this letter?
Yeah. So this chapter has a lot about fear. That's why we kind of led by even talking about Charlie Kirk, not because he was fearful, but because he was courageous. So this chapter unpacks what courage looks like. And again, it has more to do with not being exempt from the feeling of fear, but still doing the right action that you're supposed to be doing, even when you're feeling fearful. The feeling of fear isn't bad, but the action of fear is bad. It's letting fear control you. And Screwtape's talking about the fact that fear can lead to shame, and fear can lead to hatred, and all of these other things. But we wanted to, you know, what's the Bible verse that kind of captures this idea, that really just unpacks all of these aspects of fear? And Ian, you actually found this one at Revelation 21, verse 8. And in the book of Revelation, we see a lot of the, you know, a lot of the tying up of the course of human events, human history kind of starts to wrap up in a sense. And it says in verse 8, but for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. Basically talking about how in the end, anything that's not of the Lord gets cast into the lake of fire. Death and hell get thrown in the lake of fire. That's the eternal destiny of those who aren't outside of Christ. And the first thing on that list, and on that list is some nasty stuff. Sexual immorality, the murderers, sorcerers, actually talking about like witchcraft, all these terribly demonic things. The first thing on that list in Revelation 21 is the cowardly. And those who fear overcome them.
And so, yeah, think about this. In the Bible, and we've talked about this several times, and for me, the big takeaway on the Bible from Old Testament through New is don't be afraid. It's the message right. that is continual through it. But it never says being afraid is a sin.
It just commands us not, and then really, if you think about it, it's a command to not let it control us.
Right.
It's a command. And as you do that, the feeling of fear diminishes over time. It's right. not a bad thing to be having the feeling of fear. And even the man in the letter here, the patient is, I mean, he's got bombs blowing up around him. He's got his, you know, his friend's body parts being blown up against the wall. I mean, he's got a lot to be terrorized by. But it doesn't let it stop him from doing what he's called to do, both in his obedience to like his line of work and his duty as a soldier, and then also in his emotional response, because Satan wants us to turn our fear and direct that fear towards hatred towards our enemies to validate, you know, the suffering that we're going through. It's one of the points, or embracing shame. And you know, God is saying, don't let that stuff happen. Just continue to do what you're called to do, walk in obedience, and do not fear.
And let's be honest, when we look at Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane as well, he was dripping sweat, blood, because right. of the fear of what was to come as God incarnate, made man, who was then about to suffer and go through his passion. But it never said and never talks about those being shameful moments. So when you hear people talking about, oh, I live my life because of feelings and it's all about feelings. If you guide your life like that, you are going to fall into so many demonic traps.
100%. Yeah.
You know, you're going to guide your relationships by emotion and feelings. And oh, my heart flutters, not asking the question, is this a good person? Are they going to treat me well? What's our plans for our future? You're going to drive things like that that are just going to lead to bad situations. Probably.
You know, I think it's interesting. I think it's awesome. On that note, Ian, I think a lot of times biblical Christians, conservatives, people that are valuing truth at a high level tend to be viewed as those who diminish feelings as if like, because we're always saying, you know, facts don't care about your feelings type of thing. And that's all true, but it doesn't mean that we disregard them. It means right. that when we have our feelings, we can discern them. We can walk in wisdom and we can look at how our feelings might be. You know, it's like when you touch a hot stove, sometimes there's a feeling there. To let you know of a warning. It's something that should be brought to your attention. It's just that we don't immediately let our feelings go in the driver's seat. Sometimes we let them inform the route, but the feelings don't get to hold the steering wheel at all times. That's really right. the difference.
And I think that goes into the idea of actions are so important. And in a lot of ways, actions are what God wants, probably even more than feelings, or he wants to drive us by more than feelings, because regardless of how you feel, what you then do next is what matters. And I think I've said this to you before. There's a guy I love listening to on the radio. He's a great thinker, Dennis Prager. And he says this: I don't care if someone wants to punch me in the face. I care more about the person who punches me in the face.
Whether or not he punches me in the face.
Right.
You know, right. Because we all have those reactions. Yeah.
They can think what they like. They can feel what they like. And again, back to Charlie Kirk.
Right.
A lot of people wanted the guy dead. The difference is the guy who actually went and did it. And that ultimately is what's going to, you know, it's damnation for that guy. You're not allowed to take an innocent human life, another human life. Thou shalt not commit murder. Thou shalt not kill. However you want to interpret it. It is not to take a life of an innocent. You just not to do it. So,
well, and I think it's such a good, clear example to look at, like, again, because there's a lot of people that are on that side. There's a lot of people who are glad that Charlie's dead and they're cheering and celebrating and all that stuff. And it's like having those thoughts and having that feeling, like I don't necessarily fault those people for not liking Charlie's message or having some sort of negative response. But these are people that have not been, they're not discerning their feelings. They're not screening it through the filter of truth and what's fair and what's just and what's honest. They're just letting emotion lead and take things to the extreme. And that's how we end up in a world where Charlie gets shot and half, you know, half of the country is actually celebrating either quietly or out loud. And let's just call it what it is. It's demonic.
Yeah.
It's why we're doing this podcast. We're calling out evil. It's pure demonic, and it stems from people not having control of their emotions and letting their emotions drive their actions.
Right. And to that point, and I was thinking of the lady who at one of these protests puts a gun up to her throat and goes bang, bang, to mock Charlie being killed. Take out the name Charlie Kirk, to mock anyone being murdered like that.
Right.
It is, you are now committing an action. This is no longer, you've taken it from a feeling and an internal emotion that you are guided by God to control.
Right.
You've now made that an over outward action.
And I saw that video as well. And really what she's doing is she's giving a nice demonstration in the scene realm, in the physical world, of what the demonic are doing. The demonic right. are dancing with joy. And we can't see the spirits, but if you want to know what they look like, I think that lady was a good example. She's showing us what the demonic realm is looking like and what their response is to the Charlie Kirk situation.
Yeah. And it's sad because, you know, these are all like people who are made in God's image. They're image bearers that I don't think they carry around any shame for those actions. And I think they've hardened their heart to such a degree that I don't know how, and maybe my faith isn't strong enough, that they are going to be able to save themselves from this.
Well, I think it is a good warning to know, once your mind starts to become more and more debased, I think the Lord does at some point give you over to that, if that's what you keep pursuing. So it is, you do become more entrapped on the enemy side, and that makes it a whole lot more difficult. But let's do this. Let's kind of flip the script a little bit, because we're calling out a lot of the evil, heinous activity on that side. How about a word to our listeners who are Christians that are walking with the Lord? We're not just trying to call out the evil, situations where emotions are steering the ship and the demonic is taking over. How do we respond as Christians? How do I read that verse in Revelation, knowing that, you know, the cowardly are on the top of the list? How do we respond as Christians who are sometimes fearful of things? You know, and I look at Charlie, who was maybe fearful to go out on a stage. I mean, he seemed to have nerves of steel, but that doesn't mean he wasn't fearful at all times. You know, how do we react as Christians to direct our actions to not being overtaken by our emotions and still doing rightly in the midst of fearful circumstances?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it comes down to, we're all going to go through emotional states. We're all going to go through different feelings. But I think you have to be guided by some kind of constancy. And as Christians, we find that constancy within Scripture. And within Scripture, it gives us guardrails in ways to live our life so we don't lean too much on the wrong things. And then I think we also have to look, and to paraphrase, you know, C.S. Lewis in here, he talks a lot about, you know, moral issues in life are tested by the cruel world that we live in. Because the animal world's cruel. And in a lot of humanity, and we look back on wars, and C.S. Lewis is right in this, in the midst of the Second World War, there's a lot of cruelty out there. But this is, this is a testing point for our faith when we're going through these kind of things.
Yeah. No, I think it really is. And I think that's why it's important to just put those categories out there, because we do at times, whether it's minor fear of conflict, fear of standing up for truth, fear of confronting something that we need to confront. It's okay to experience the feeling of fear. Nobody's going to get it right the first time, and you might live the rest of your days and always have that feeling of fear. But I would ask kind of a devotional question to ourselves, like, what's something that we have a sense of anxiety or fear over, but we know we still need to act in the face of it to do the right thing? Because that's the message to us as believers today. What's something in our lives that we're letting fear take over? And not that verse in Revelation 21:8 is you know, directed wholly at us, that we're totally identified as cowards to be cast into the lake of fire. But what's something that we can say, fear has a little bit more of a grip on my life than it should. I need to start acting up and standing up for what's right a little bit more.
Galen, that's a great question, because I think there's a lot of people in a tumultuous job market at the moment that are very fearful that they're going to lose their job, lose their income. And I think that you can take it even with that example and bring home emotions that aren't going to infect the rest of your family and instill fear throughout your wife and your kids that this could all fall apart, this fragile setup that we've got. Because there's a lot of people out there living paycheck to paycheck, and to lose their job really puts them in a very fearful situation.
Right.
So especially if you're the breadwinner, you should come home and not inject that fear into your family. You should come home, plan, be brave, look at your options, look on other things that you can do just in case, because mm-hmm. you do not want that fear to lead you into despair, where you then become useless to your family.
Right.
Because despair can be crippling, and despair puts you in a position where you don't act, you just freeze up and you don't
do anything. Yeah. Like, I'll throw one other thought on top of that, just expanding on what you said. I think one of the best cures for fear is action. And ironically enough, this is what C.S. Lewis's point is. It's that it's not that the patient doesn't experience fear, but he's still doing the right thing. He's still taking good and godly action. He's probably still pretty fearful because bombs are blowing up all around him. But in terms of most of the lives that we endure, we're called to take good godly action in the midst of fear. But then there's this positive snowball effect where the more action you take, the less fearful you become. Activity actually displaces fear, because the big thing you're afraid of, once you start acting and solving a problem or standing up for something, you realize, oh, it wasn't really as big a deal as I thought it was. And then it promotes more action and less fear. So it can either spiral out of control, or it can actually spiral right back into control. Stand up and take some action in the midst of fear. It's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And just before we wrap up, I did write when we originally were taking notes on this episode the first time around that there's a bit of a matrix here, which is when you're fearful because you're in some kind of danger, you can then choose either to act and move up and away from fear, or you can actually act in a very negative way, which becomes cowardice. And that can actually lead to a lot of shame long term. There's a lot of people who will say that they, you know, didn't want to stand up for the country, didn't want to, as first responders, do things. There's even a story of a police officer who was at a school shooting who didn't. He feels a lot of shame for not acting. So you've got to be careful there. But then you also don't want to have, when you're in the midst of danger or whatever that is, whether it's, again, it could be a work thing, it could be something where you feel physical dangers that you're is to then flip it to hatred. Because when you flip it to hatred, again, you're not acting, you're emoting. And that hatred can amplify fear even more and drive you into despair. And then when you have instances where you're in moments of absolute impending danger, you have to then act. Because other than that, you're just going to be subject to whatever that danger is willing to inflict on you. But that's where courage starts to kick in, because you act and you start to become courageous around things. But you've then got to just be very, very conscious of the motions you're taking, the actions you're taking within that, and those around you, that you're not as well being so conscious of your self-preservation that you let others fall into harm's way as well.
Right.
Yeah, letter 29. It's heavy. It's, if you've read the Screwtape Letters and you've got to this stage, you understand where it fits in around everything else. But yeah, ultimately, as Screwtape says, we have to help the patient do something cowardly, not just think about it, but actually do something cowardly. So until next time, Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time, here with the Biblical Easter Eggs in season 2, and we'll see you again next time.